on today's show.
And in the global South, which we think of as the large part of the world that's not the West, the U.S., the fact is that they don't need more unqualified workers to come invest time with them. What they need is people who understand what it means to serve as pastor, shepherd, leaders, and come alongside in healthy ways and facilitate the ongoing growth and development of the church and then the planning of the church in parts of the world where the church is not yet established. That what that means is we need ministers of the gospel built up as qualified pastor shepherds who can go do leadership work in church planning and church revitalization or development, if you will, in places where the global South could use the kind of help that would be expertise-driven help and not just simply resources sent.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE. I'm flying solo here today in the Missions Podcast studio, and so buckle up, it'll be a bumpy ride. We do apologize. Today you're getting only one host for the price of two, and yet, despite that, looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have today about a couple of really important issues in missionary preparation. Before we go any further, though, you know, if you've listened to this show or frankly any show, what you can do to show the show some love, and that is to leave a positive rating and review in your favorite podcast platform of choice. By doing that, other people will be able to discover the content, be blessed, maybe even be mobilized to the field as a result. In fact, I was just discussing a recent controversial episode that we had behind our paywall with a guest of ours, and he shared, despite the debate that we were having, that one of his unbelieving family members listened to it and is even asking questions about the Lord because of that. And so to every one of you that's left us a positive rating and review and has shared the show with a friend, we thank you for doing that. Don't stop, because we believe that the Lord is still at work to bring these worlds of rich theology and missiology together with the practical boot leather of the Great Commission. And so let's continue to get the word out. We thank you to those who've done that already. Also, if you'd like to stay tuned after the main show today and get more practical insight on how you can apply some of these contexts in your church, or maybe if you're a missionary on the field, how your church back home can employ some of the concepts that we're about to talk to our guest about today, you can go to missionspodcast.com/subscribe and join our premium podcast family. Listen, you're not supporting a business. You're not lining anyone's pockets. Your gift of $9.99 per month, though, does allow us to do more. It helps keep the lights on here. It helps us get out on the road to conferences and other special events where we can share interviews in person and get the word out. And because you partner with us, you're entitled to receive access to our special overtime segment, as well as our private message thread for individuals who follow along on Signal and other exclusive benefits, including a free gift. So why not sign up as a premium partner today? Again, go to missionspodcast.com/premium. Well, with those housekeeping items out of the way, I'm delighted to introduce Mike. We'll refer to him here for our purposes today as Mike G, and he is a G. And I think that as we talk today, you'll see that he is the OG. But all kidding aside, Mike, we've been trying to make this conversation work for several weeks now. I'm really glad that the schedule's aligned, that the technology is working today, that the stars have aligned. God has smiled on us, and we're able to talk to you here today. Mike serves as pastor at University Baptist Church in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and he is also on the training team with Global Serve International, GSI. I first learned about GSI thanks to our mutual friends with Radius International. I know you've been very involved with Radius as well, and we'll get into that in a minute. Yep. And you've also done plenty of work overseas, and so I'd love for you to share about that and fill in the details of my very insufficient biography, my friend.
Yeah, it's okay. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to catch up with you here. I'll just give you a quick fly over our life and mine particularly. So I had the privilege of growing up in unreached, unengaged language context because my grandparents worked in those kinds of contexts. And then my parents went back to those settings. My grandmother, in fact, was a New Testament Bible translator in one of these unreached languages that we spent time in as young people. So because of that, I had the opportunity to be engaged in these settings where it was obvious what the barriers were to the gospel, the language and cultural barriers particularly, and being exposed to unreached, unwritten languages as from a young age, I was very impressed. Just so many memories of experiences standing with unreached peoples in really remote areas of the Amazon basin and seeing the ways in which they were separated from the gospel. And so that impression on my life as I was going through school in Venezuela and then in Brazil as well in the Amazon area led me back to university in the U.S. And I finished a degree, a linguistics-focused degree, Bible translation-focused bachelor's degree. And then my wife and I met in graduate school in linguistics later. And we returned to Venezuela ourselves as missionaries, had one one-year-old son at the time, and went into a really remote setting and built houses and an airstrip after doing survey work amongst another unreached language in Venezuela. Mm. And were there for 6 years, had gotten into language culture learning amongst that language group. And then we were among the ones who were kicked out of that area by the government when Hugo Chavez came into power. And so through a time of soul searching and decision making, we made the decision to go to Papua New Guinea. And we worked there amongst another unreached, unengaged language group for 6 years. And then after a season of making decisions related to my mom, my wife's family's health, her dad was ill with cancer, we went to Denton, Texas, and I worked on staff at a church, Denton Bible Church in Texas for 6 years. So I jokingly refer to that as my 666, you know? Six in Venezuela, six in New Guinea, six in Denton. It's memorable, right?
Yeah.
But after 6 years in Denton working in as leading missions teams, the church had sent a lot of teams into the world, equipped and sent church teams into the world. We still had the desire to get back engaged with unreached peoples. And so that was when we transitioned to Radius International for 2.5 years. And I was on staff there helping coordinate training curriculum development and then teaching there and finishing a doctoral degree at Southern, which I did while I was there. And now we've been in Arkansas for the last almost 3 years. And my role here is as an associate pastor, giving leadership to missions and equipping in the context of the local church. And particularly, we're interested in seeing qualified workers sent into this kind of work. I've been involved in missions. I joke and say since before I was born, you know, and I've seen so many iterations and implementations of worker in the field kind of scenarios and just have been challenged by the lack of adequate preparation in many of those cases, certainly lack of pastoral development in many of those instances, which I think contributes a lot to the rates of attrition that we see. So we've been here for 3 years, still involved with Global Serve. I've been involved with Global Serve for a decade or more as part of the leadership team and balance that, juggling that load alongside pastoral work here in the church in Arkansas.
Listeners, you've probably heard by now about Missionary, which is an exciting new missions conference taking place October 16th through 18th in Jacksonville, Florida this year. It's being put on by Radius International, Greenville Seminary, and a number of other important organizations with speakers like John Piper, Ian Hamilton, Chad Vegas, Brooks Bucer, and more. This is the beating heart of the gospel-centered long-term missions sending movement. So naturally, you'd better believe Scott and I are going to be there. The Missions Podcast is going to be there. ABWE is going to be there. What about you? We would love to see you there. And I have good news. It starts with the bad news. The bad news is that after August 16th, 2024, prices go up to $249 for primary registration. But if you use our promo code as ABWE, as a friend of the show, you can register for $159 if you purchase your ticket before August 16th. So what are you waiting for? Go to abwe.org/missionarycon to get that promo code and register for $90 off what will be the main registration fee. Register for just $159. Come and see us at Jacksonville, October 16th through 18th for Missionary. You can learn more about the conference at missionary.net. Again, you can get the exclusive discount code at abwe.org/missionarycon, and we'd love to see you there. So you don't have anything going on, really, is what you're saying. You haven't been up to much lately.
No, it's been a short list.
I do have to ask, this is going a little bit off script, but what's the one thing about Venezuela that Americans don't understand? Because I think most people, our only knowledge of Venezuela is Hugo Chavez and the regime there and the inaccessibility of it now. But what's the biggest thing that you would think? Let me share that with the listeners.
Well, of course, as a kid there, it's a wonderful country. It has a lot of biodiversity. People don't necessarily think of Venezuela as having a significant section even of Amazon with unreached peoples there. But there are quite a number there already or still that need access to the gospel because of those barriers. So the biodiversity there, the food is wonderful. The Venezuelan people are wonderful people. Just they've been through some hard times politically, let's say, in the last almost 20 years now.
Well, and who hasn't, right? Yeah. That's the other side of the equation as well.
Yeah.
Well, I love the way that you framed your ministry and your heartbeat, and that's what we want to talk about here today, sending qualified missionaries. So I know that's a word that's pregnant with meaning. Your work was recommended to me by one missionary that I know, that we both know, who's, I would say, very qualified and is doing a wonderful job in a very difficult context. But I think we also look out. There's been this new movement online where, especially in theologically reformed circles, suddenly missions is uncool. We've got so many problems here at home that we need to tend to our own house before we focus on overseas. I'm sympathetic to that because I've seen a lot of missions done poorly. And I think we look out and we see, there's a lot of trash happening in the name of missions, this cheap, mass-produced, high energy, but low long-term impact, big splashy overseas programs, not a lot of depth, not a lot of quality church planting. And so why is it for you, Mike, that you place that emphasis on sending quality or qualified workers to the field? And what does that mean for you?
Yeah, well, when we look at the history of missions, and man, there's a lot we could talk about, but the history of even the student volunteer movement, which had a huge impact on missions, in the late, 19th century, early 20th. And we think about the fact that there was a heavy emphasis on workers going out, so mobilizing and sending. But in the process of all of that, the local church receded into the background in such a way that they weren't really involved in what it took to equip and send. Mm-hmm. And sending agencies took the dominant seat in the overall process. So as we've spent time in the field, I can remember this personal testimony. I can remember going to the field as a trained linguist, qualified to do Bible translation, a master's degree in linguistics, and yet not understanding even from my own life what pastoral ministry meant. And especially like what was I trying to represent as someone who's going to do church planting work and yet not really seeing myself as a pastor shepherd. That was kind of a category set to the side of missionary training and mobilization in a way. And so just increasingly, as I spent time in the field, recognizing that my primary role was to serve as a pastor shepherd. And in the global South, which we think of as the large part of the world that's not the West, the U.S., the fact is that they don't need more unqualified workers to come invest time with them. What they need is people who understand what it means to serve as pastor, shepherd, leaders and come alongside in healthy ways and facilitate the ongoing growth and development of the church and then the planning of the church in parts of the world where the church is not yet established. And so I'm increasingly convinced that what that means is we need ministers of the gospel built up as qualified pastor shepherds who can go do leadership work in church planning and church revitalization or development, if you will, in places where the global South could use the kind of help that would be expertise driven help and not just simply resources sent to them.
What you said is critical, that every missionary, if they're going to be doing work of ultimate value, needs to be about the work of ministering, of church planting. I think for a lot of missionaries, if they're listening to that, I think there's a population of people that are saying, well, what do you mean? My platform here is my mission. I'm making disciples in my role as a teacher in this country or as a doctor in this country. What do you mean that I'm also a church planter, that I have to be a minister? I was told that I could be a missionary without having that pastoral gift set. Walk that out for us, because I agree with you. I think we absolutely need qualified men as ministers of the gospel, lead church planters, ministering word and sacrament, able to preach, able to lead the local church assembly and see that assembly established and multiplied in all of these contexts. You also need a team of people around those types of individuals. We need teams, we need whole families. And so what does that look like for you, holding those two things together? And how do you introduce someone to that idea that, you know, being a missionary, it's actually not so easy. You can do it. It's actually not for everyone.
Yeah.
That number one, it's a very, you know, qualified type of person, a very elite. But then even beyond that, too, specifically, we need men as pastors to be all about this, to be the tip of that spear, because otherwise we don't see local churches established with elders, and then we're not doing the Great Commission, right?
Yeah. And I think, in one direction of answer to that question, you know, I talk to pastors in the United States who are perhaps equipping pastors. If their churches are in healthy places, oftentimes they're equipping pastors to be sent out in the United States to do church planting work. And when I ask them, what does it take to equip a man well with his family to go to a new place to either revitalize a church or plant a church or lead in pastoral work in a church in the U.S., they typically have a very long, clear way of describing how they get that person ready. Mm-hmm. And then you turn the tables with many pastors and you say, but what does that look like for your church then in thinking about someone going into that sort of nebulous sphere we call missions? And when you ask that question, it often creates a scenario where there's not much that's said. We don't quite know, like we don't know what the parallels are. And I would just advocate that the parallels are many. And that the foundational responsibility of seeing, singing, reading, preaching, and praying the word translates into every context. And the person who needs to know how to do that well is a pastor shepherd. Mm. And so I would not want a team to go out without someone who's going to give leadership to that kind of task. And in the context where we're going, the challenge that we face is that the teams, I call them, they have to be lean. In other words, they're going into settings where the access is limited and we don't have the luxury. Man, here in our area in Arkansas, we sent a church planter up north of us. He was able to take 30 people from our congregation who were willing to go with him. But that's not always possible in some of the kinds of settings we're going into. So I'm especially thinking toward the kind of lean team that serves as a core of planning a church in a context that will be hard to access. And many parts of the world where the greatest needs exist are like that.
I was in a conversation with some mission leaders the other day here at ABWE, and we were having a conversation about this very thing, the centrality of church planting. There's a lot of good ministries that we say no to. Mm-hmm. There's trafficking, rescue work. Now, there's some missionaries that are doing that, mm-hmm. But there's some times also that we've had to say no to ministry opportunities like that are meeting real needs of mercy ministry, of justice in that true biblical sense of justice. And why are we saying no to some of those things? Well, because our job is not just to start ministries, it's to start churches. A healthy church, yes, is going to minister to the orphan, the widow, the sojourner, those that are around them. But the job is to start those churches as nuclei from which all of these other ministries, including local evangelism, can then spread out. And so, you know, for as much as we've talked about church planting for years, and it was the new hotness, and that's sort of died off a little bit, in reality, at a global level, church planting is still the need. It's still right there at the epicenter of the Great Commission. But I want to shift gears just a little bit, Mike. You've brought up a few times your linguistic experience, and that's a part of the missionary task that I feel as though is neglected. When I went through my biblical studies degree and I wasn't thinking missions, I wasn't even required, believe it or not, to take Greek and Hebrew in a biblical studies degree. I mean, we've lost sight of the importance of languages for ministry here in the U.S. Yeah. Much, and that's not to say that you can't minister without Greek or Hebrew. I do. I mean, that there's, but at the same time, for overseas ministry, it's so far, it's so remote. Sometimes all you can learn is strategies for how to acquire the language when you get there, right? Because there's nobody here stateside that can teach you not only a new language, but then a third language, a tribal language, as opposed to one of these trade languages that's easier to pick up from elsewhere in the world. And so what's kind of the map that you lay out for students, maybe that you were teaching them at Radius, the framework for how do you pick up a language in one of these hard places? And what's the role that that plays in the whole preparation process?
Well, I mean, you think about, man, the cultural and language barriers that are so baked into reality for it's there's a reason why God used language as the primary marker of division in Genesis chapters 10 and 11, that God himself instituted that as a barrier for understanding. And so therefore, there are strategies that need to be brought into the picture in order for us to be able to acquire second cultures and language as well. So in the course of our time in Papua New Guinea, and then in the years before that in Venezuela, I was involved in a language learning consultancy. I've been involved in for a long time, 20 plus years. And in the course of that, we have contributed to the development of a learning language culture learning curriculum that we've implemented both at Radius and now in the program that our friends at Radical have in another part of the world there in Asia as well. And so the program focuses on how we participate effectively in building deep relationships in the life of a local community. And in the process of that, we are building layers of exercises or activities that help us target the growing capacity of a learner to get eventually to worldview level communication. That's how we talk about it. And if you think about a concept like the gospel, which we say is simple and even a child can understand, but to communicate that concept adequately in a second cultural language environment, like the Yanomami language environment that I grew up in, there are just a massive number of barriers that have to be addressed in order for the gospel to be clearly understood. I mean, if we take a simple phrase in scriptures, like in the beginning was the word, and you try to make that clear in Yanomami, there are just a lot of complicated factors. So the program that we've been involved in creating is being applied all over the world in majority languages. So those widely spoken languages that you're talking about, but also can be used. The same program can be used in minority language contexts. And the idea is to help learners gradually build up through staged activities and exercises, gradually build themselves up into that worldview level culture and language understanding so that they can exchange complex opinions with those around them, and they can hypothesize about different views of reality, and they can deal with really abstract kinds of topics. They can help come up with spiritual vocabulary that's hard to identify in that context. I mean, I can remember in the Ata setting in Papua New Guinea thinking through the idea of repentance. And it sounds simple for some of us, even though we don't all understand what it means, even when we say it in English. But to try to come up with an adequate expression of what repentance is, a lot of people would think, well, there's just you find the word for repentance and you just use that. Well, it's rarely that simple. So in the process of building ability in language and culture learning, you're also learning your way toward that kind of worldview communication that will speak truth across those barriers in a relevant way.
You've been doing this for decades. What's the biggest mistake that missionaries make with language acquisition or not learning a language? What's the biggest blunder that you've seen in your time?
My observation is missionaries don't realize what the learning process will require of them. So we're used to seeing language programs that are academic programs in some of our colleges and universities. And as we would all note, many people come out of those programs having taken Spanish or French or German or whatever, and they're not very communicative. They're not very proficient in speaking ability. And so the biggest issue for me is missionaries understanding that they're going to have to progress through a set of intentionally developed activities. They can't start with worldview level communication. That's one that they need to know how to stage their way into and toward that kind of communicative ability. But mainly that they need to realize that they have 3,000 hours of work ahead of them before that they're really able to communicate at a competent level. And most missionary programs, they're not set up to invest the kind of week upon week and hour upon hour time that they're going to need if they really want to be effective in communication in that setting. And so I just encourage missionaries to be looking for a program and looking for the space and helping their organizations to understand what that space, that time requirement will be, because that is the kind of estimate of time that we've seen over the years. I've learned, by God's grace, I've had the opportunity to learn five languages besides English to that kind of a level of proficiency, just because of the circumstance of life we've encountered. And so you are adding up a lot of hours upon hours of need to learn.
I think one of the things that we need to communicate to missionaries is sort of to give them permission not to appear very productive in their first term, because that first term, if all you do is devote any extra time that you have to language learning and to learning to navigate the culture and to simply getting your bearings and hanging in there past that worst season of culture shock, which really peaks out around that 18-month mark, then you'll have a foundation for the rest of your time there. But I think so often there's so much zeal and there's emphasis on need and activity. And as North Americans, we want to produce, we want to achieve something that people can very easily slip into activity and not devote the needed time to culture and language acquisition that first term. But then you're paying the price of that for years to come, especially as you're missionary experience continues through the years. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's absolutely a turning point. You know, we talk about a concept akin to, let's say, market level fluency, where you can navigate your way around the world and off around your world, your new world, this new world. Yeah. And oftentimes that does happen. If you're being faithful in language culture learning, many would be surprised to hear that does happen about the time you're overcoming that 18-month threshold of, we can survive here. The Lord's given us grace to understand enough about the frustrations of life here that we're coming to the other side of that. Well, then you still got a long road ahead of you to get to full fluency from there. And so you do have to be prepared for that. You know, so I often would say to folks, 2.5, 3.5 year process of really becoming effective as a communicator in that setting.
And until then, you're going to have to live through periods of awkwardness and embarrassment. You're gonna sound like a toddler in that marketplace, right? And that's a character building crucible, right?
Absolutely. And that's how I think of it. That's how I communicate to students when I first started teaching, is talking about language learning as a crucible and as a conduit. So a conduit for ministry, but as a crucible for character development for your life, because I've been humbled. No, the most humbling experiences, of course, are those. You think you're competent. You know, you have your degrees and your education and your Western identity, and then you're back in a situation where you are knowing nothing, essentially, and you have to be willing to be submitted humbly to the process the Lord has you in building relationships with people locally. And I tell you, there's a privilege that, as you come out on the other side of that and people have helped you to grow into a competent communicator, that the relational rapport that you can experience in that is really priceless. And the dynamic of having lived life alongside a life with a group of people who've helped to teach you, in effect, about their culture and language, such that you can then turn around and communicate truth with them and alongside them. It's just a great privilege of opportunity. I will say that, but it's humbling. There's no doubt.
Well, Mike, here's where I'd like to kind of park the conversation for the time being. And it's this question of thinking of missionary training and the various ministries that are doing it. You're involved and you've been involved with Radius, with Radical, and just zooming out a little bit on what's happening in the church, what's happening in the modern missions movement. It seems to me that there's been a little bit of a pendulum shift. For so long, the messaging that I heard from a lot of mainstream parachurch organizations was kind of this quantity over quality messaging about mobilization. Anyone can do it. Anyone can be a missionary. I'm a missionary. You're a missionary, right? We've all seen those messages. We've all probably laughed about them a little bit. I think a lot of that is well-intentioned. I think you're trying to get people out of the pew. But we also know the downside of that is everyone a pastor? No. Of course, should everyone care about others' souls? Yes, but certain people are ordained into pastoral ministry. And certain people are missionaries, even though everyone can care about the mission and be involved in some way, be rope holders, be people who pray, etc. But this is not for everybody, right? And I'm seeing that correction that's taken place over the last several years. I think Radius was at the vanguard of that messaging, saying things like suffering is normative and you should be prepared to spend the rest of your life if the Lord should choose it, giving that life, pouring that out to an unreached and unengaged language group. Having this kind of subversive messaging, calling people to die, calling them to come up into something a little bit greater. They weren't the first ones to share that message, but they sort of put lightning in a bottle. And Radical has obviously had a similar message in the training program and school that they've created. But do you see the churches and do you see missions sending agencies making that adjustment and realizing like, hey, this isn't just a numbers game, trying to move as many people through a mobilization pipeline as possible, that this is actually about raising up, I don't want to say elite, because nobody's better than anyone else in that sense in the kingdom of God, but a special qualified few who can carry on this mission. And we need to focus on that and not allow our goals of growth to compromise the integrity of the work. Are you seeing that shift in thinking take place among practitioners, or is that sort of still a minority dissident view among some people that maybe have an overly traditionalist approach and the rest of the missions world is kind of over here having a different conversation, not on the same page? How do you see that landscape that you're situated in as we're, again, we're trying to send qualified missionaries, not just more missionaries?
Well, I'm certainly encouraged with the fact that the messaging seems to be clearer. I'm challenged, though, and sobered by the fact that there still seem to be a lot who won't accept a send fewer and send them better kind of a mindset. So equip more or fewer workers and equip them really well.
It would be great to send more and equip them well. I mean, that's the other thing. It's not led. Yeah.
Yeah.
All things being equal, sometimes that does mean you say no to some folks. Sure.
Well, because if local churches are going to invest qualitative effort, to me, the key issue is local church ownership. So if local churches are going to invest quality and qualitative resources into tasks like this, that means they're going to have to narrow down the list of those that they're going to be doing that kind of investing in. And so that's church to church to church to church. And that kind of trickling on effect of each church taking that kind of responsibility and being willing to narrow their scope to those that they are determined before the Lord to equip and send well. That's a shift that I haven't seen because that's a kind of a grassroots reality that church to church have to endorse. And that's the part I would love to see. I would love to hear about more individual local churches who've identified fewer, who they are determined before the Lord to invest well in such that they're equipped pastorally to go do leadership and ministry work in other contexts. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that more broadly expressed, then I'll feel more comfortable that we're making more actual progress because no one else can do that work for the church. The church has to determine and take that up for themselves.
And I don't think that can happen until Reformation happens in these churches. I was having a conversation with a coworker today about a missions conference that recently took place at a church. And some churches, you know, they're very much still in that seeker driven, a little bit more entertainment driven, like, you know, we're a fan of the slick production quality, those types of things. There's plenty of churches that are ostensibly conservative theologically and value the Bible, but are still stuck in that attractional mode of ministry. And many times when they do send missionaries, they send them not necessarily because those people were raised up organically within the church, but sometimes they're just harvesting the fruit in sending that other people have invested in. Other people planted that missions seed in someone's heart, and that church got to come along at the very end of that process, harvest that fruit, take that person, send them out. But can some of these big church machines necessarily raise up people from being sort of, you know, a spiritual toddler all the way to the point of, I'm willing to go do this very difficult thing because Christ is worthy. I think we need the Reformation to come to churches first, where we're about all of those verbs that you listed off earlier about the word that I'm going to get wrong, you know, seeing the word, you know, preaching the word, right? Obviously, this commitment to the biblical means of ministry that God has given us. I think it's only when we get serious about those things in our churches that we'll have the substance, and we'll sort of like Gideon, we'll have gotten all of the other people out of the way. We'll have the 300 that are left, and the Lord might look at that and say, hey, now I can use them because now they're dependent. Now they're not just dependent on their managerialism, their programs, and other things of that nature. Right. Speak to that as well. And then I think this tees off our next conversation very naturally.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I think that's right. Because, you know, I talk to leaders in the church and they say, well, wow, what you guys are doing there at your church, it sounds really ambitious, your multi-year training process, but we can't do that. And my first question to them is, are you discipling men and women, and especially with your men, are you discipling people to be pastor elders in your churches? Because if you're doing that, then you're doing not only fulfilling a biblical responsibility per Ephesians 4, but you're also doing 80% of the work that's required for them to shift to another context. And now what you need to do is just identify another equipping entity that can come alongside you to help fill in the part that you feel less qualified for, and find a sending entity that can help support that kind of work, because in another setting, you won't be able to do that for yourselves. But the fact is, the core question is what you're identifying. Is the word functionally central in such terms that we're not going to plan to transfer forms of the life of the church, but functions of the life of the church based on the centrality of the word of God into another context? And are we discipling men to be able to be capable to handle that responsibility? Mm-hmm. And so there's a commonality that can be shared among churches for doing that kind of equipping work. And I think all churches should be involved in that. If they're being faithful to what the word of God calls them to, then that is by definition what discipling ends up producing, is qualified men who can serve as pastor, elder, shepherds of the church.
Yeah, amen. Just encapsulate what you just said, Mike, before we go to our next part here. It's simply that if you don't have a missionary pipeline in your church, do you have a pastor, elder training pipeline at all? That's focused on raising up qualified ministers, because actually the one of those builds on the other. The former builds on the latter. If you don't have either of them, maybe it's because you're more focused on maybe making disciples, or maybe entertaining goats rather than those who are really there to seek the Lord. I mean, it's something that I think every pastor, especially those of us that are results oriented, need to look in the mirror and be willing to ask ourselves. But Mike, what we're going to do is pick up this conversation in our overtime segment for premium subscribers. And I really want to hear from you how you've implemented this in your church as a pastor, because again, every church is different. This is going to look different, but this is where the rubber meets the road. You know, it's easy to say, well, everyone should go through this other program, this training institution, this agency, but the Great Commission is given to local churches to run with. And so we want to hear some best practices maybe that you've learned along the way trying to implement this type of a model that you're describing. Before we get into that and share that with our premium subscribers, Mike, remind people if there's a way, and I know you're trying to be careful about identity and security, as many of our missionary guests have been on this show before. So as best you're able, can you point our listeners to where they can either hear more from you or from some of the organizations that you work with?
The Global Serve International is an agency that can be found at their web address, GSI. There's a .org address there. And then on our University Baptist Church in Fayetteville page, my Mike G identity is there, and someone could click on that and find me personally if they needed to.
Very good. And ABWE here, we are great fans of the ministry happening through GSI. And so we wish you all of the Lord's blessings in that. For our regular subscribers, we will see you in next week's episode. But for the rest of you joining us for the overtime show, of course, stay tuned for that. You can get that from your premium podcast member portal. And if you have questions or topic suggestions, ideas about future guests that we can interview, reach out, Alex@missionspodcast.com. I would love to hear from you. Scott, my co-host, again, not here today. He'd love to hear from you as well. And so go ahead and drop us a note. Let us know if you've been blessed by the show. Also, let others know if you've been blessed by the show. And go ahead and leave us a positive rating and review in your podcast platform of choice, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Until our next episode, go make disciples of all nations. God bless.